Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Future World of Ink Network. This is your host, Virginia S. Grenier of the Writing Mama Show. Today is Monday, April 14th. We are doing the show tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, I think, for a second. And before I jump into tonight's show, I just need to quickly go over some of the upcoming shows that we have going on. There will not be tomorrow night A Good Story is a Good Story. But Marsha will be back the following week with her show. Fran Lewis does have her show book discussion this coming Thursday. Guests are still to be announced, and that will be at 4 p.m. Eastern time. And then Bennett Pomerantz, our new host here at the World of Ink Network, has another Anything Goes is the name of his show, and that will be the first show on Saturday, this coming Saturday, and that will be at 11 p.m. Eastern, it looks like. And then Cassandra Dane is back with The Edge on Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. So those are the upcoming shows here on the Featured World of Ink Network. So today here on the Writing Mama Show, we're, again, doing something a little different from just doing author interviews. I actually asked my dear friend Dave Smith to join me today, and we're going to actually be talking about self-publishing and basically self-publishing versus traditional publishing, because I know that's been a huge thing going on currently in the publishing world. Dave is also an author. He has his series, The Hidden Mickey, which does very, very well. He also is the owner of Synergy Books, which is a hybrid publisher, so it falls into the whole Indian self-publishing arena. So welcome to the show, Dave. It's great to have you here again.
Thank you, Virginia. Great to be here.
I know, it's like you don't get enough of me, right? I mean, we're just talking about the book festival we're planning in October, so I feel like you're just saying, leave me alone, lady.
Well, that's kind of ties in with what you're talking about, is where do authors who self-publish or hybrid publish or even print-on-demand publish their books, where do they sell them, and how do they get exposure? So we'll be... I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit more about that as we move through this segment.
Oh, yes, definitely. So the reason why I had you on the show is because both of us have been out, and we've both done presentations at various book festivals, conferences, gone to universities and have spoken. So I've, and I know you talk a lot about this subject, at least in a lot of the different, times where we've been in the same circuit as speakers.
Yep.
So that's why I wanted you on the show, because you are, and I wish, I mean, Blog Talk Radio, obviously it's live radio, so no one can see things, and I wish our listeners could see the presentation that you have that covers this topic, because I have sat in it many different times, and you're always updating it and changing it, and it is just so much information, and it really help those who want to get into writing understand which path, they want to take, or if they want to try, eventually do all the different paths, have a better understanding. Because I think right now with all the changes in publishing that are happening as writers,
right,
a lot, and it's probably the number one thing Marsha Casper Cook and I hear is, I've written this manuscript, I've taken these classes to hone my writing skills, but the marketing and the publishing, there's just so much information and there's just so many different opinions that nobody knows how to shift through all that information. And you really have done a good job of shifting it to help people understand it at a very easy to understand level.
Right.
I would love for you to kind of explain to our listeners the difference between a self-publisher, a hybrid publisher, and a traditional publisher, because I think that's where people get confused the most. They don't. There's all these
absolutely.
Terms out there, and they get used incorrectly a lot. So
and there's a lot
understand.
Of misinformation, right? Misinformation
mm-hmm.
about both the names and what they entail. And I usually, like you said, I usually do a PowerPoint presentation to help augment the message being given. But I'll try to facilitate this segment by trying to explain it in a way that people will understand. Those of you who are authors out there understand that I've gone through all the same hoops and procedures I had to learn. I will say kind of the hard way because, you know, there was a vast learning curve for once I had written two top-selling tennis books and self-published those because of the choices I made regarding the book. I felt I could market the book. I was already a senior editor for a website, top website on tennis, so I already had the means to market a book on tennis. But then when I came up with the idea of Hidden Mickey, which is a historical fiction novel series about Walt Disney and Disneyland, along the genre of a National Treasure meets Da Vinci Code meets Walt Disney kind of idea, I knew I had a bigger genre as far as general appeal. And mm-hmm. one of the things that you and I both know is how many authors have submitted query letters and manuscripts and introductions and bios and all the things that, you know, writers market book advises people to do, to send out to hundreds of, several hundred publishers to try to get their book, quote, published.
Mm-hmm.
Let's step back a little bit and talk about the history of publication from the standpoint of why it's changed so drastically, because obviously you and I both know 25, 30 years ago before the Internet, the only way to get a book in a bookstore was through a publisher because you had to get it into a distribution network that the bookstores buy their books from. So the idea of a self-published title was sort of a second-tier kind of book. It was like, well, it wasn't good enough to get published, so the author had to go out there. We used to call it vanity press, where an author would print their own book simply to get their title, their name on a cover of a book that they've written because the publisher wouldn't be interested in it, so they had to go that route. Well, you and I both know it has changed drastically thanks to both the Internet, thanks to e-book publication means from Kindle, Amazon's Kindle to Barnes & Noble Nook. So now authors have a lot more viability to sell their book without going through a publisher. And really the only bookstore, the real main bookstore that authors can't get into unless they are published or, more importantly, distributed, is Barnes & Noble, because Borders is no longer in business. And you have thousands of mom-and-pop stores around that authors can sometimes get their books in either via consignment, or they know somebody, or they just happen to go by and talk to the owner and try to get their books in that way. Barnes & Noble only will stock books through their distributor. So even a publisher can't get a book into Barnes & Noble unless the publisher has an account with a distributor. So that's the caveat for a lot of authors. They kind of rate themselves whether or not they can get their book into Barnes & Noble. Well, let's look at the reality of those books in Barnes & Noble or any brick-and-mortar bookstore, and that is 8 out of 9 books don't make money. They don't sell enough copies to make the bookstore, the agent, the author, the publisher money. I mean, you and I can stand by a register at a Barnes & Noble, and we can see the books being purchased pretty regularly, and they are the mainstay, the Harry Potters, the Twilights, the What's Hot Now books are the ones going out the door. 55,000 titles are in there, and only a few hundred of them are being bought regularly. So what's happening to the other 54,000 titles that aren't being bought? they're sitting there gathering dust. So go ahead and ask what you're going to say.
Well, and I was just, because the one thing I've noticed, too, with bookstores, Barnes & Noble obviously being the biggest one that's out there, and I think there's, I know there's some on the East Coast, I can't think of the names of them. I think like one's like called Warren Books or something. But it seems like with those bookstores, even though they'll carry some of like the other titles from, and when I'm talking traditional publishers, I'm talking from the large guys to the small press, everybody. But it tends to be the books that hit the New York bestseller list or your Caldecott winners, the Newbery Award winners, ones that win the Library Association Awards. And there's other awards out there. Like my book's the Mom's Choice Award-winning book, and even though I have, which is a really popular award to have in the children's market, my book is offered to be ordered through Barnes & Noble, but very few of the Barnes & Noble actually have my picture book on the actual shelf, even though it's an award winner. So it's like they pick and choose between which awards they, award-winning books they buy, and then, of course, the New York bestseller list seems to be their major, kind of way of picking books. And so I think that's where it gets frustrating, too, with everybody wanting to focus so much on getting their books in bookstores when the bookstores have really narrowed how they pick their books, too, I guess.
Right, exactly right. And, I mean, you got to look at, just take a kid's section of Barnes & Noble. You're competing with probably, 200, 300, 400 titles on a similar age, level and concept level, thickness of the book, that kind of thing. So, the problem, of course, is how do you get a book into Barnes & Noble? Well, the first one is what you just said, and that is if somebody requests it. The other way is to market the book through some of the different marketing programs that are out there. For example, my distribution company, which is Atlas Books, which is the largest in the U.S., I have the option of using them to promote a certain title if I think the title is worth promoting. For example, I just published Kristen Decker's book, 50 Years in Polygamy, which is a hot topic, especially here in southern Utah, but certainly has interest across the country. Well, to get that book into stores and get the buyers interested in it, you've got to get them to be aware of it. And one way is through NetGalleys, which is a digital online service that is provided by distribution companies and other marketing programs that put your book out there in a digital form for buyers, owners, librarians to read the book and be aware of it. So that's one way, if you have a book in distribution, that now you can get that book either stocked or at least more people knowing about it, more buyers, more of the people that are involved in stocking books. Of course, the problem is, You can get stores to stock a book, but if it doesn't sell within 5.5 months, they're going to sell that book back to the distributor because they're not going to want books taking up shelf space that are not selling. And that's a very common occurrence of virtually all publishers. And this is why the success rate of an author, an unknown author, we're not talking celebrities, we're not talking about experts in their field. I'm just talking about the everyday Joe Schmo, who's written a book and wants to get a book in Barnes & Noble or get a book published, is that these publishers simply know that the numbers game and that person's book is going to be one out of nine or 1 out of 10 books that's going to make them money? Probably not, because they don't carry a celebrity-level name, nor they have a track record already. So it's sort of a caveat of how do I create a track record if nobody will publish a book? How do you get a book sold to create that? And, the traditional route is still a viable one, although it is very, very difficult. You better have a very well-written manuscript, a very well-written query letter, and you better know how to play that game and send out thousands, I do mean thousands of manuscripts out there. That costs a lot of money. That takes a lot of time. And the return value, you figure if you're getting rejected 300 times, what are the chances you're going to get rejected 700 times? Probably pretty good that you're going to get rejected.
Yeah, well, And it sounds like, you know, and of course I've been, you know, I'm on that side of the writing desk, you know, I've played this game. For those listening, I'm sure they're thinking, you know, well, it sounds like, you know, going with the traditional publisher is still a good idea because they're connected to the distributors, you know, this, that, whatever. But I think the one thing that people don't understand is, one, I mean, like you're a hybrid publisher. I've worked with Halo Publishing. They're a self-publisher. Mm-hmm. And both of you guys are connected to the distribution networks. I mean, I think...
Correct.
What a lot of people don't understand is a lot of hybrid and self-publishers now, and I'm talking good ones, ones who really care about the authors, who are really there to work and help and train their authors, they are connected to those distribution centers. So that has changed, where before, I think in the past, a lot of self-publishers weren't connected to a lot of the distributors or weren't connected to the right distributors to get their books,
right,
to get those books out into the buying field.
Yeah, it costs a lot. It takes a lot of time and a lot of money for a publisher like myself to create those accounts because there are so many costs involved. Authors who are new into the industry don't understand that the cost of printing the book is just one of the many costs that a publisher will have to absorb in addition to distributing. Because when we put a book, I put a book in distribution, I have to pay administration fees every month. I have to pay storage fees every month. I've got to pay insurance fees every month. I have fulfillment fees, return fees. There are countless costs involved with any distribution network that have to be absorbed by somebody. And this is why even if and let me step back and say something here, because I would now, by today's standards, I would hate to be a traditionally published author, because the return is so little to the author. A lot of authors don't understand that, first of all, the so-called upfront advance money that we've heard, authors got X amount thousands of dollars to write a book. That doesn't happen. I mean, unless you are truly a celebrity of significant stature or you have a significant track record of a certain genre or title of books, they are not offering money up front to virtually any author. Now, there are probably many exceptions, and that's exactly what they are, exceptions. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is the percentages. As writers' market will tell you, they'll give you what the typical publisher is paying. And the typical publisher is paying about 8 to 10%, and here's the fine print, on the wholesale cost of the book to the author. So when I do lectures you've sat in on, I always kind of bring this out because it's an eye-opener in and of itself. If a book sells for, let's say, it retails for $13 at the store, it's going to wholesale for about $7.49. So an author who is getting, on the higher end, say 10% royalties on the wholesale cost of a book, is only making about 74 cents a book if that book sells at full price. Now, at 74 cents, if I sold 10 books at a book signing, I would make, and you can do the math, $7.49 total profit if that book sold 10 copies at a book signing. I guarantee I probably spent more than that in gas to get to the book signing. So,
I was going to say, too, the other thing that happens as well on the traditional site anyways, when you're getting your royalty percentage, besides it being on the wholesale, which, by the way, I'll tell everybody exactly what it is. When a traditional, and this is across the board, when a bookstore buys your book at wholesale, they get 40% off the cover price of your book. That's what they buy it at. It's generally they get 40% discount off what the cover
and
price
Amazon,
is.
Amazon gets 50% off, so they even
Amazon gets 50%. The other thing, though, too, is when the book sells, even though you only make the wholesale price, the reason why most traditional publishers don't pay out, most of them do about every 6 months. You're lucky if you get a shorter window than that. And I've seen some that do, like, you get your royalty check, like, once a year. It's like 12 months. And the reason why that is because they have to wait until any books, damaged books, books that are returned, books that are unsellable, get sent back to distribution because they take that back out of your royalties. Most people don't understand that.
Exactly. And they... the thing is, with us as a publisher, we do not get paid for a 6 month minimum, even if the book's
right.
sold, because of what you just defined, because we have to guarantee buybacks to stores that buy books. A typical Barnes & Noble will never, ever buy a book if the publisher
right.
or the distributor does not guarantee that the book will be bought back at full price. So even
mm-hmm.
if 20 books go out to a Barnes & Noble, say in Timbuktu, if only two of those books sold within six months, they're going to send 18 books back to the distributor, and we will. The distributor will have to refund their entire purchase for those
mm-hmm.
18 books that did not sell. So, again, you're right. I mean,
yeah.
I've had many authors where initially had a great sale because they were out there promoting the book, doing book signings, but for whatever reason, didn't sell a lot of books. And so guess what came back? All negative numbers when a particular title was returned. So what may have started off as a pretty good month, by the end of that six-month period, looks a lot different if that book did not sell. So one of the things that, as a side note to this whole procedure, is whether you're a traditionally published author or a self-published or hybrid or POD, which is print-on-demand,
mm-hmm.
you need to go out and market your book. You need to still be a very active, engaged author to go out there through social media, through websites, through email, through literature, through whatever means you can, because most even traditional publishers now require the authors that are traditionally published to still market and promote their own title.
Mm-hmm.
So that always raises another red flag for me as an author. Now I've got to put a different hat on. Now I'm taking my publisher hat off and putting my author hat on
yeah.
and saying to myself, well, wait a minute, if I'm only making 74 cents a book and I still have to go out there and market and promote and spend my own energy as well as my own money to promote this book to make that 74 cents or that 8 or 10% on the wholesale cost of book royalty. Well, wait a minute. Why don't I print the book myself and make a gob more money? Because let's
yeah.
take that $13 or $15 book. If I print enough copies of the book, and we're talking between 2,500 to 5,000 copies, I can get that book priced down to about $1.80 to $2 a book. If the book sells for $13 and I sell them for $13 and they cost me $2 to print, I'm making $11 profit per book. Now we're talking some serious money because, for example, Hidden Mickey, which sells exactly for $12.99, it wholesales for $7.49. When we did the LA Times Book Festival for 2 days, we sold 600 books in those 2 days at $11 profit per book. That's a whole lot different than making 74 cents a book if I was promoting the book and selling the book for a publisher. So now
right.
I was looking at the difference between making, say, $800 profit or almost $7,000 profit because I self-published and self-printed the book and sold the book myself. If I'm going to have to go through all those marketing and promotional items and go to these events to sell the book, I certainly would rather make $11 or $10 or even $5 profit per book than the 74 or 75 cents a book. And so that's something
yeah.
an author also has to know and understand.
Right. And I think that's probably why the POD and the e-book and the self-publishing, the hybrid markets or even, you know, small press where they do pay a little bit higher royalty are really starting to become more appealing to authors because they realize that I know there's people who are like, well, I still want to do the traditional route. I just don't have the money to put up front. I mean, and that's another thing, Marcia, and I hear a lot when
yep.
we talk to people. And I know you and I have heard that as well when we've been out and we've talked to people. You know, I just don't have that kind of capital to put out. And I know one of the things you always talk about when I've heard you, you know, talking to somebody or when you've done a presentation is well, why would a publisher want to invest in you if you're not willing to invest in yourself?
Exactly.
Which is very true, but here's the thing, and I've thought about this a lot lately, and I, you know, from and, you know, and that's of course from conversations I've had with other people, you know, studying the market myself, and one thing I started realizing, especially with doing my own books, is the reason why I think traditional publishers, and this is something I don't think a lot of people really sit down to calculate out, is, yeah, there's a lot of money you put up front, and I know they think, okay, well, that means I have to sell, you know, maybe 500 or 1,000 books to recap that money before I even, even though I'm making that $11 profit per book, before I'm actually back, in, you know, in the black, you know, from
right.
in the red,
yep.
from investing in myself. Well, the
yep.
reason why I think a lot of traditional publishers, and I'm not, and it's not because they're greedy, and I'm sure, you know, obviously, yes, greed is part of it because we are a capitalist society, but also the reason why I think royalties are lower when you're with mid-sized to the big, you know, publishers
mm-hmm.
is because they have a team that's constantly working to sell the books, you know, and I'm not talking about the new books coming out, I'm also talking about their backlist books. So maybe you're a new author
right.
with them, or maybe you're an author who has 5 or 6 books that were published 5 years ago with them. They have a marketing team that's always on staff. They have all their editors that are on staff. You know, obviously there was the printing costs that were involved. So they have to spread out over the life, because it's a it's you know, they're constantly paying these people to do what they
yep.
need them to do. So they have to spread out amongst all their authors, the A-list authors all the way down to their C-list authors, meaning, you know,
mm-hmm.
your book sells every once in a while, but it's not their top-selling book, to cover all those costs for everybody. So they try and balance those scales, where when I think you do more of like the POD, the self-publishing, the hybrid, or even e-book, a lot of times it's like, you know, you pay the printing, like you're saying, you know, you pay the money to have 5,000 books published. Okay, those books are now published. You pay the editor once. That was a one-time flat fee. You know, if it's a,
right.
like
yep.
my picture book, I pay my illustrator, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars to do the illustrations for my picture
right.
book. It's a flat fee. It's done unless I agree to do a royalty payment to them. You know, so it's like it's all up front, but they're not reoccurring costs. It's like once the cost is done, it's done. Where with traditional publishers, it's more like those costs are reoccurring because you constantly have that marketing team, versus if I go market myself, I pay one time to a marketing place, or, you know, pay them for X amount of time to sit there and work on marketing my book for me, or I pay to do my own marketing, you know, paying for advertisements or whatever. And I think that's where you actually benefit more and actually end up making more money on the indie side of the, I'm going to call it the indie side, on the indie side of the scale, because, you know, it's more flat rate fees that you're paying
right.
versus constantly having to pay into the kitty to cover those costs when you're with the medium and large press publishers.
Absolutely. Well, the thing with traditional publishers that have that so-called staff is, as an author, my question would be, if I was approached by a traditional publisher who said, oh, we'll market your book. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean I'm going to put one ad out there and I'm done marketing your book? Because let's face it, if a book isn't making a publisher money, in other words, it's not selling well, will they continue to spend money on marketing and promoting? And that's where responses I've heard from so-called hybrid authors who actually got ripped off, because, I mean, I've talked to authors who've spent $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 to be, quote, published, and their publisher did one thing that fulfilled their obligation to market their book. They may have only printed a few hundred copies, and the publisher made all this money off this one author. That same author, had they taken that same amount of money and printed their own books, they could have printed 2,000 copies, had $2,000 left over to do marketing with, and controlled their everything about their book, controlled their rights. Again, a lot of authors who sign on with a traditional publisher sign away their rights for 2 to 5 years. So
yeah,
they can't even
them,
take their book elsewhere.
Yeah, and I was saying a lot of them don't realize, too, with a lot of the traditional publishers, because, you know, and I'll use J.K. Rowling as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I can even use Stephanie Meyer was a little bit smarter on this one. But usually when you sign the contract, if you're not careful, they ask for digital rights, movie rights. I mean, they ask for it's all rights
yep.
across the board.
Yep.
And there's a clause in there that, yes, you'll get an X percent if it gets sold. But, again, you get a percentage.
Yeah.
So, in other words, the publisher's doing all the negotiating. So, and I know with J.K. Rowling was pretty good, because when it came to the movie rights, she was very good about making sure she was able to have some control on who was going to be the producer, who was going to be the director, and helping to pick the cast members for her book.
Right.
But a lot of authors miss that, and so they have no say. But I don't think she had say on who was going to actually create the movie. I don't think she could say, yes, I want Warner Brothers versus Disney or versus whomever to actually do the movie. Luckily, it was Warner Brothers, and they do a fabulous job. I know Stephanie Meyer, I think, had learned from that. Plus, she had David Farland, who's an author down here, who helped, teach her a lot of writing stuff. So she was aware of that. So she helped retain a lot of her rights. But I look at the Inkspell series, and I love that. And, I mean, that's actually an author. I mean, she's a huge author. Funk is – everybody, a lot of people know who Funk is and have read a lot of her books. And I was very disappointed with what happened with Inkheart. And I remember reading later that, she knew the rights got sold. And, yeah, she made a royalty off the movie rights sell. But she didn't have a lot of creative control over the screenplay or anything. And the series is a great series, but I don't think the rest of the movies ever got made because the movie, I don't care if it had Brandon Fraser in or not, it was terrible.
It tanked.
Oh, well, another one is the Aragorn series. Same thing happened to Christopher Polanyi. And, Polanyi, same thing. He, didn't have a lot of creative control over the movie because of the way his contract was written. And I think that's the scary part when it comes to traditional publishing is it's not just your book you're signing away. You're signing away merchandise, movie rights, electronical rights, any type of apps, all that stuff. Is in there.
Well, and a lot of these hybrid publishers who are charging these authors an arm and a leg to get their book published and distributed and so-called marketing, they're feeding on the emotional attachment of an author thinking, oh, I'm going to have a book published with my name on it. And a lot of authors who initially get into the writing the book, you and I have heard it 100 times. Oh, I just wrote it for fun. I it doesn't matter if I make money on it. That's okay. That's all well and good. But let's face it. Some of these authors are being charged an arm and a leg to fulfill that dream. When in reality and in today's world, every single author out there who prints a book can sell it on Amazon. They can put it on Kindle for free. They can. There's no need to pay out a large sum of money unless the publisher or the hybrid publisher is going to provide them with a significant number of books. That's where I created my company to save these authors from wasting their money because, number one, I make 90% of my profit on my books through my own sales, and those are sales through my own website, through Amazon, through Kindle, through my own sales at book events, book festivals, and things like that. That's where I make a lot of more money. Now when I can get a book for under $2 printable, I can now put them into distribution, and my authors who do that, who print their own books, but I put them into distribution for them, are still making much more than the so-called 75 cents royalty returns I used as my example. They're making upwards of $2 to $3 a book because they paid to print the book, but now they're getting a much higher, I pay 50% royalties on people who put their books into distribution. But that equates, depending on how many books were printed and other variables, but they're still making more money, and they have the best of both worlds. They have a big stock of books in their control to sell anywhere they want, but they also have the books in distribution, so they can go to Barnes & Noble. They can have the books go out worldwide into the distribution network.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the self-publishing side because, people are going, okay, so maybe I want to self-publish, or maybe I'm going to try and send some of my books out to be traditionally published, but there's some books that I love, and I really want to get them out there, and I don't want to play this waiting game. And by the way, everybody, when a traditional publisher takes on your book, generally it takes more than 1 to 2 years to see your book in print. I have friends who have contracts where their books have been bought, but they're not going to see them printed for like 5 years from the day they signed the contract. So it's because they have other books in the line. And the other reason why, again, publishers don't take on a lot of books, as we talked about, and I'm talking traditional publishers, is not just the numbers game. They also, besides having a really good query letter and a really good manuscript, if you're writing about vampires right now, well, guess what? That trend, yeah, that's a trend right now, but it's not a trend for, to pick up a manuscript. They're looking for something new and unique and different. And unless you have something as a new author that's new, unique, and different that isn't already popular, that everybody's buying as a print book,
right.
they're going to pass you up because they're not going to take
that
gamble. So let's say you want to get on the vampire trend because you're going, well, I have this great manuscript, and I know a traditional publisher is going to pick it up because it's going to take 5 years, maybe 7 years for them to publish it,
and
the trend's gone. So I need to act now, but I don't want to get ripped off by a self-publisher or a hybrid publisher or a POD company. And there's a lot of people who think that are writers that think they know how to do publishing, and they just overnight start a company. Marcia and I have seen this happen many, many times over again. And we've talked to people who have done that and have, you know, some of them have survived, some of them have folded. But, and like you're saying, there's a lot of places, and yeah, I'm going to mention them. they can yell at me later, but Author House, I'm sorry, they charge thousands of dollars to, I'm going to name two companies actually, and they're big ones, so unfortunately I'm probably going to get an email. By the way, if you want to email me and yell at me, you email me at vsgrenier, G-R-E-N-I-E-R @gmail.com. You can help me all you want. Author House charges a lot of money. I know a few authors who've gone through Author House. They also charge you an arm and a leg for marketing, and I've had authors come to us at the World of Ink Network to help them with marketing and said we did way more for them for less money than what they got charged through Author House for marketing. And the other place is Tate Publishing. That's another big one. Tate Publishing will act like they're a traditional publisher, and they say they will traditionally publish you because you don't have to pay to have your book published with them. However, you do have to pay, and I think it's like $2,500 or $3,000 toward marketing of your book.
Yep.
You still pay them out of pocket money, okay?
Yep.
That's why I'm bringing them up. So, yeah, they're really more like a hybrid than a traditional publisher. They just kind of masquerade themselves, and I'm sorry. That's really how it comes across. I know authors who've been published with them who have been happy with them, but they charge you for marketing costs, so they're not a true traditional publisher. Traditional publishers, when they give you the advance, tell you that advance money is for you to use personally for additional marketing beyond what they do. Tate Publishing does no marketing unless you pay them to do marketing. And, by the way, you can't get out of that. It's part of your contract. You will pay that money
if
you publish with them. So
bringing
up those
go ahead. Well, I was going to add one more thing because along those lines, this is really important. This is why Kristen Decker came to me, because she was published under another company. But they tore up her book. I mean, they literally did not. She was so disappointed in the cover of her book, the text that was changed. And authors out there need to realize that if they're going with a traditional publisher or many of these hybrid publishers, again, back to that contract, be careful of what you're signing away, because if you're signing, again, those rights to your book, you're signing away the content rights as well. So they think they know what's best and what will sell, perhaps, and so they're going to literally control your book and rewrite it even with their editors and with their in-house people and take apart what you've put together. And this is one of the things that she was so disappointed with. And several other authors I've spoken to, same thing. And I'm sure you've come across this in your editing world.
Yeah, I've actually, Tracy McDonald, who we both know, and when she was on our show last week, she's by the way, that was the Writing Blind show for those who follow my show. She was very discouraged because she, being blind, can't see her cover, and her publisher sent her the cover and said, well, this is your cover, and gave her no description. She had to literally ask all her sighted friends, what does this cover look like, and please tell me I don't have a Playboy model, you know, literally cover on my book, because my book is a G-rated romance, you know. And she had no say. She had no control of that. And being blind, that was kind of scary for her. I mean, she had and I hate to use the term, but she had to blindly trust this publisher all the way.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not saying there aren't both the publishers you mentioned. It's not that they're unethical. It's just that you got to know what you're buying. No different than buying a car or anything else. And again, I go back to the emotional tie to a book, and so many authors get enamored with the idea that, oh, my book's going to be published, that they don't weigh the cost or what they could have got or what they could be getting with everything, because they're just excited about getting the book published. How many of those are good?
I was going to say you're hitting a great theme, because as we're having this conversation, what's really going through my mind is, it doesn't matter if you're doing traditional publishing, hybrid publishing, POD publishing, only ebooks, or self-publishing your book and touching into ebook and print books. It seems like, besides knowing which route you want to go, finding the right publisher is so, because like I said, I'm not knocking Tate and I'm not knocking Author House. I'm just saying those are two of the biggest a lot of people, when they go on the indie side, tend to fall into. And I know authors who are very happy with their books there, and I know authors who are very unhappy. And I think it's really important to find, just like the publishers, doesn't matter if it's a self-publisher, because I know at Halo, Lisa Yumina, the owner of Halo, she actually sends out every manuscript to an editor committee, and we all review the manuscript. That's what I do for her. I'm one of the editors who helps review the manuscripts, and I give her my opinion. Do I think this is a good fit for Halo? Do I think this author as a person is a good fit for Halo? Do I think the marketing strategies that are being offered are a good fit for Halo and what the author is planning on doing? I mean, we look at all that to make sure it's a good marriage, because self-published or traditional published, I think that's the most important part. Like you said, authors are so excited, like, oh, this author, this publisher wants to publish me. Doesn't matter who they are, self-published, traditional publisher. They get excited, like, oh, my book's getting published, and they don't stop and go and say a second, is this somebody I want to, and I'm sorry, I'm going to use this term, is this somebody I want to be in bed with for the next X amount of time? I mean,
exactly.
Just like when you get married to whomever you're married to, or when you get into a relationship, and are a couple, I mean, this is somebody that you're going to be dealing with through either the book performing well, the book performing okay, or the book performing terrible and trying to fix it, And if you guys don't get along, it's going to be a miserable process. I don't care how the book's being published.
Absolutely correct. Yeah, absolutely. And there's no guarantee that any book's going to be profitable, and I've already explained that most books aren't. I mean, look in your house. How many books do you have compared to how many books that are available? And obviously a lot of books are staying on the shelf, and some are good, many are mediocre, and probably a great number of them are just really not that good at all. And so, to summarize everything we've sort of talked about, I think obviously the first step is to write a book. The second is to make sure it's well edited. And this is something I still work with myself and other authors on, and encouraging that, because a lot of people get done with a book, go, oh my, and this is the classic. Everyone says, oh, everyone who's read this book, all my family and friends, they just love it. Well, it's not real objective to begin with. And number two, you need a greater cross section. Now, that being said, there's a lot of big name authors, the Dan Browns, the David Balducci, the Stephen King. I don't care who you're talking about. There are big name authors who get horrible reviews. I mean, let's face it. Even Rawlings and Dean Koontz have got some really bad reviews, whether they're objective or subjective.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm a huge Stephen King fan. I actually just read Under the Dome as a print book, and I just I did it through an audiobook, so I re-listened to Under the Dome, so I reread it, but through audio, Under the Dome, because I'm following the TV series, and I knew there was huge differences, and everybody's been talking about that, and I love that you mentioned that, because Under the Dome is probably one of the prime examples of big, A-list authors. With Stephen King, and it doesn't matter if you're a fan of Stephen King or not a fan of Stephen King, when it came to the book Under the Dome, you either loved it or you hated it. There was no in-between.
Right.
With that book. I mean, and it is literally a 50-50 cut between his fans. Half his fans love it, half his fans hate it. And
but the key is, his name carried the book, so he sold, 5 million copies.
And it became a TV series.
Right. So his name carried the title, even though it may not, certainly by some criteria, it was not a good book.
It probably would not have become a TV series, and it probably would not have as sold as many books if it wasn't Stephen King. I will be totally honest because it is literally one of those books. It's a love or hate book. I mean, well, here's another one: The Hobbit by Tolkien.
Yes.
You know, The Hobbit. Mm-hmm. When Hobbit came out, most people did not like Hobbit. They had a hard time reading that book. The only reason why that book is still around is because Lord of the Rings became a classic, which made Hobbit become a classic because it's the prequel to Lord of the Rings, so people would eventually go back and read it because they wanted to understand Lord of the Rings better. And, of course, now with the movies, it's helped improve that book. But that book struggled first done, when Tolkien wasn't a huge name, because it is. It's another one, love or hate books.
Yeah. Well, that again, going back to the everyday author that's out there trying to get, and I encourage. I mean, I may sound on the negative side of things because I'm actually trying to protect authors, but I encourage everyone to write a book because I've spoken at many book events and writers' conferences, and the first thing I say is that we leave two things behind when we die, and that is our children and that which we write or record. And, you know, I had a very close relationship with this because my father, who passed away when he was 55, 2 weeks into his retirement, was one of the top tennis coaches in the country. Well, unfortunately, he left nothing behind other than the kids he coached are the only people that he had an effect on. Luckily, I coached with him and I coached against him, and one of my goals when I wanted to become a writer was to record or write a book that documented more or less what he did so successfully, sort of what he was kind of the John Wooden of the tennis world. And so I really encourage people to leave that, whether it's something they know or a family history or some fictional story, something that will have their name on it for all time and eternity. I mean, as long as books are out there, they'll be out there. And so I do encourage people to consider writing something that you're interested in or that you feel would be of beneficial help to others or that will preserve your family legacy or what have you. So, you know, I really love the fact that I have 7 books in publication that will live on way after I'm gone, that my family will have and they're, you know, the families that generations beyond. I love the idea that there is something that will be preserved of me, you know, even after I'm gone.
No, and I agree. So I'm just curious, what would you say are the key things that authors, you know, when they're shopping around for a publisher, besides, you know, not accepting the first contract that comes across their desk, because that tends to be like the number one newbie writer mistake. I'm being honest. I've heard this from many new authors. I took the first contract I got, and now I look back, and I wish I would have done things differently. So besides that tip, what are some of the other things that authors who are trying to build their name, who are hoping to get established, that they need to look at when they're, because, you know, the other thing too is a lot of publishers, doesn't matter if they're a traditional publisher or a self-publisher, a lot of them will have built into their contract that the second or third book they get first, you know, dibs on. So, I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. When you sign a contract, you're basically going to bed with these people for a very long time. This is a, you know, a long commitment that you're making, and contracts are hard to break. So what do they need to have on their check off list?
You've covered one, and that is to review your options. If you do get a contract, understand that most people don't get a contract. So why am I getting a contract and thousands of other authors who have submitted query letters have not gotten a contract? Well, may very well be not a real good contract. So the first thing to consider is if you're going to go traditional and you're going to send out all those query letters, know who you're talking to. Invest some time and research in looking at the reviews online of different publishers and the experiences people have had with those publishers, number one. Number two is review that contract. Are you willing to give away the rights? Most publishers are going to take minimum of 50% of your movie rights, your domestic rights, your foreign rights, your ebook rights. You're going to pay them. So even if you've got a best-selling book, you're going to end up, they're getting 50% right off the bat. If there's a movie out there, they're going to get minimum 50%. So those are some of the things to consider. The odds of your book becoming published, A, and becoming a movie, B, not probably real high on the chance list, but that's what you want to at least look at, because you never know if you are the next J.R. Rowling and you're going to write the next Harry Potter. Obviously, that would be a wonderful thing, but make sure you are controlling the rights to your book. Another thing to consider that we haven't talked about is if you do self-publish and print your own book, it's a lot easier to get publishers interested in your book if you have a beautiful book in hand. When we came out with Hidden Mickey, we had the screenplay writer, one of the screenplay writers for Jerry Bruckheimer, contact us and ask for our books for Jerry to consider, because Jerry has done a lot of Disney movies, and we were very excited, although we've not heard one way or the other, but just the fact that Jerry Bruckheimer was interested in the Hidden Mickey series, and everyone who reads our book says, what a great movie it would make, of course. It's about Walt Disney leaving a trail of clues to a treasure he hid. Wonderful. When's the movie coming out? The idea was that at least we had books that Jerry Bruckheimer could have in his hand, and I think the movie industry is a lot like the publishing industry in that if there is a title out there that has interest, it takes 2 to 3 years for a book to become. I mean, how long did Harry Potter take? I can't remember, but it was several years after the book had come out, the first movie had come out.
And it's in a lot of studios usually have more than one studio who's interested, and they usually ask like 3 or 4 different script writers to write a script based off the book. So, I mean, it's not even like one script idea gets presented from the book. I mean, they're looking at multiple versions from multiple people.
Exactly. And whether it's doable and whether it's, there's just a lot. And how many movies do they have on their docket to do before they even consider doing yours? So it's a long process.
Right.
But we feel actually, besides Jerry Bruckheimer, but Irwin Winkler, who did the Pretty Woman and the Rocky movies, was also asked for our books. So again, if I had waited for a traditional publisher to do Hidden Mickey, those two producers would never have gotten our books in this period of time. The books have only been out for about 2 years now. So, 3 years. So the first book came out 3 years ago. We have 5 in the series. So, again, the self-publishing routes has kind of, you alluded to this earlier, and that is the speed in which you'll have your book out there. Obviously is a lot faster than if you waited for a traditional publisher, which can take upwards of 2 to 3 years before the book comes out in print, and it may not even look like the original book when all is said and done. These are things, back to your question, what should the author be looking for? And that's, time. Here's another thing that we haven't talked about, and that is, are you capable? You and I both know a lot of older authors who are in their 70s, 80s, who are either not tech savvy or not computer savvy or don't have the energy to go out and do this marketing and promoting that we've talked about. They basically can barely, get to a book fair and sit down and start knitting before someone comes up to ask them for a book. I mean, these people are not capable or have the means in which to market their book, even if they print the book themselves. So that's something to think about, is if a person does not have the qualifications to take on this responsibility of marketing and promoting a title, then obviously that self-publishing route is probably not a good fit, because they're just not going to be able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is very true, because that was one thing that I've talked to a few people who are on the disability side of the scale. They said, I just physically, because of I'm a quadriplegic, or just because of the type of I have Lou Gehrig's disease or whatever, that I just physically can't go 24/7, like you do, around the clock, with all the, you know, all the crazy stuff you go, you know, you have going on. And so for them being with a mid-sized press, a small press, or a big traditional publisher is better for them, because they can have the marketing team that is, you know, under those houses. You know, they got the book reps that are out there at the trade shows pushing the books for the publisher, so they don't have to be there doing it, you know, or they can just come and do an appearance and leave.
And let's face it, those publishers who have those marketing programs in place have already, you know, they know what they're doing. They are capable of doing it. It's just a matter of whether they see value in spending time, because a lot of these publishers have X number of hundreds of titles under their jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. How many of those titles are they going to spend this amount of time on versus this amount? How much are we going to spend money-wise? How much are we not going to spend? And those are the things that, again, you're at their mercy of. Hopefully you have a title that they feel is worthy of their time and investment to market and hopefully sell.
Here's something else, and you mentioned this actually when you were talking about how long your series has been out, that it's been 3 years since the first book in the Hidden Mickey series came out, and you have 5 books. The one thing that I remember so much when because we've had Jack Remick on here at the World of Ink on various shows as a guest, but he came out here to Southern Utah and did a spring writing workshop for our writers out here.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you weren't able to go because I think you're golfing or you're at a golfing tournament or something. I think that weekend.
Probably.
Dave does golf tournaments too. He's our very athletic writer. So when Jack Remick was there, he did a whole thing about, you know, the different, are you a writer or are you an author? And he said, you're a writer if you just write and you dabble and it's a hobby, but you never complete a manuscript. He said, you're an author if you have a bookshelf of manuscripts and or, you know, multiple books published. So even if you haven't published your books, you have, you know, at least 5 completed, totally completed manuscripts, and or, you know, you also have, you know, published books. And the one that really struck me, and that's one reason why this year I'm trying to focus more on my writing, even though I love helping writers and with the marketing side of stuff and helping Halo with, you know, on the content editorial side, you know, helping them find, you know, good manuscripts that fit their company, is my own writing, because I realize I only have 2 books published, and, you know, it's been 3 years, and I only have 2 books published, and here's Dave Smith, and he has you have your 5 Hidden Mickeys. You have your
two
Under the
books,
Manifold.
Then,
yeah, you have your memoir.
And
then you have your tennis books.
And
you have a CD. You have a tennis CD, or is it 2 tennis CDs?
DVDs. Well, the other thing, and that definitely, here's the interesting thing, is I remember my first, you know, of course, when I wrote my tennis book, my first tennis book came out in 2004. First Hidden Mickey came out around late 2010, so that's actually been 4 years. My math is wrong. The idea was that suddenly I actually have 2 other books. I have 1 book out and another one coming out under a pseudonym name, under Walter Davis, because they're completely different books. I don't want people to mix up my authorship name with the Disney books with these other relationship books. So, just out of wanting to keep names involved, I use a pseudonym. So the one thing I always point out to people is look at all the titles that are out there and look how many books that are written by those authors. You know, usually you can go to that front page and find out how many books that author has out. And one of the things that for a lot of authors, that first book, there's a lot of self-doubt. There's a lot of, oh, I'll never finish this. Oh, I'll never get it in print. Oh, I'll never, blah, blah, blah. Well, once you have a book in print, you now know you can do it. And that's the wonderful thing. Again, as a self-published author, I got my first book in print and was able to sell it. I was able to get reviews. I was able to find people that valued it greatly. And now I suddenly knew I could do it. And so now, yes, you're right. I do have technically 8 books and then one more coming out, a 9th book coming out. And I believe my goal is to have probably 25 or 30 books out on Kindle in the next 10 years, because Kindle is the new, you know, there are more e-books now read than paper books. So, you know, one thing as an author we haven't really touched upon a lot of, and that is the world of e-books is certainly the is here to stay because there are more e-books sold now than paper books sold. And that I think it was about a year and a half to 2 years ago that kind of reached that hurdle of matching and surpassing the paper book reader, that more books are read through Kindle and Nooks and other readers like the Kobo and other type of e-book readers. So now you're talking about a whole new realm that an author should be considering, and one of the first things I tell an author today is put your book on Kindle, put your book on Nook.
Right.
It doesn't cost a dime.
And doing that, because there's no print cost, and the thing is with a traditional publisher, again, you only get usually like 10, maybe 15% royalty on your e-books, where if you do it yourself, and that's the other thing, you got to be careful, if you do go traditional route for your print book, is you don't want to give away your e-book rights, because
you can
put it out there yourself, or even, you know, have Amazon help you, and they don't charge very much to help convert your book into a Kindle for you, and they know what they're doing.
They have it defined out there on their frequently asked questions.
Yeah,
they show you how to do it.
Right.
Absolutely.
If you're not computer savvy, they do have a team that will do it for you. And obviously they know what they're doing, because, I mean, the Amazon platform is just phenomenal. So they're not going to, you know, give you just some schmuck. I mean, they're very professional. And now you're gaining 100% of your royalties on your e-books.
And, I mean,
because they do take a small part, Amazon does. But you make more money. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. A typical $9.99 book on Kindle, you're taking home about $7.40 of that. Or $7 of that $9, $10 book, you're still making roughly 70% of the royalties. That's what they pay you, 70%. And again, there's no cost involved. Absolutely.
Well, and as I say, and going back to, you know, having multiple books, is when you go hybrid, POD, self-publish, you know, do e-books yourself, you know, where you're publishing them yourselves, ebooks. So again, self-publishing yourself on the ebook platform, is the more titles you have out, the faster you grow, I think, a fan base, and the more people see your name out there, they realize, okay, this person isn't just a one-hit wonder, or it's somebody who just, you know, whipped up a book, you know, in their sleep one night, threw it, you know, slapped it together, and are trying to, you know, pimp it on me. They actually take you more serious, because, and that's what I got a lot from Jack Brimmick, is, you know, if you want to be an author, keep writing. You have to keep completing those manuscripts. And honestly, I mean, a lot of the big authors, they're still doing their traditional thing, but because they want to get books out faster, you know, like how you have literally, I mean, you have five, you know, you have multiple books out, you know, and so you could say, you know, you're almost putting out a book at least once a year, if not, you know, every 6 to 9 months.
Yep.
And so maybe you do, you know, have some of your books that you really want, that you feel so strongly about, that you think could do really good, or you think have, like, you know, you want to see it go far. So like, okay, I'm going to submit those ones to my traditional publishers. And you're like, okay, I like this book, I think it's good, but I'm not sure a traditional publisher will take it. So maybe that's the book that you get it as good as you can, and then maybe that's the book you do the self-publish on. And I kid you not, and I'll use my book as a prime example. I wrote my Babysitting Sugar Paw. I did that as an assignment when I did the Institute of Children's Literature course. And it started off as a short story assignment for that course. Then I fixed it and revamped it, and I did it at, and submitted it to Storybook Library as a short story for a magazine, the Storybook Library. And Kevin Scott Kohler was the one who illustrated the one illustration for the magazine story. And he's like, you know, this is a really cute story. You could play, you know, trim this down and hone it and make it into a picture book. So that's how it became a picture book, was the illustrator who did the illustration for the magazine said, you know, you might want it. So I ended up doing it as a picture book. Well, that was probably, I think, like my second assignment I did. So even though I loved the story, I was still a very novice writer. Not saying that I'm not still, you know, green behind my ears. I do have some green behind my ears still. But, I mean, I was, like, wet behind the ears, okay? And so when I started submitting that to awards, you know, to contests to see if it would win awards, I remember telling you this, Dave, I would, like, send it off and be like, yeah, it's not going to win. And I honestly felt that way. It's not going to win. I mean, it's a cute book, but it's not that good. And when it would win, and I mean, it's won 3 awards, I would come back going, oh, my gosh, it actually won. But if I had
that's what these authors need to learn, is that that's a whole other realm, and you're example.
But I'm saying, even with self-publishing a book, I mean, that book I actually self-published, I did it through Halo Publishing. And it was because I didn't think a traditional publisher would pick it up, and I thought it was a cute enough story. Though I was like, I think it has legs. I just didn't know how well its legs were, and so I just said, well, I'll also publish it and see what happens. And it's selling, you know, it's selling fair. It's won three awards, and you know, and so that's what I'm trying to say. I mean, it's a book that it's doing. I mean, it's obviously not a bestseller, but it's doing fair. It's not like drowning in the book, you know, swamp by any means. And that's what I'm trying to say. So somebody who's not sure, you know, maybe you know, they do some self-published books, or they do some traditional books, and that's what I plan on doing, because I want to at least try and get books out, you know, every so often versus, you know, every 5 years, because if I waited every 5 years, by the time I got all the stories I wanted written, I'd be in the grave and dead anyway. So, you know.
Well, let me throw something else out there for you and our listeners here, because every author either has self-doubt, you know, as you kind of talked about there, as like, well, I don't know, I think it's a cute story, I think it's great, my friends think it's great, but you know, there's still that hanging doubt. And so I've had a few authors. This is real interesting, because it really can be a big, you put a book on Kindle, immediately if an author comes to me and says, I've got a great book and it's on Kindle and I know that you ought to publish this book, they're seeking me out as a traditional publisher. And I'm like, well, let's take a look at your book on Kindle and let's look at your sales rank. And these sales ranks are like in the 5 million rank, which means they're not selling a book maybe every 6 months, they're selling one book. And, you know, I'm like, what does this tell you? you know, you're telling me this book is great and everyone loves it. You don't have a single review. It hasn't sold a single book in 6 months. You really think I'm going to be interested as a publisher in your book? Again, it's, you know, this is a great way to kind of test the waters and try to generate, and you can obviously, the neat thing about Kindle, for those that are not initiated in the Kindle world, is that they offer a lot of different marketing programs, like their countdown deals and their free book for a day kind of thing, to get people reading and reviewing and showing an interest and seeing if you can get your sales rank up. And that's one of the neat things about Kindle that you can do with your book is, of course, provide a and picture books don't work as well, obviously, on Kindle as just straight textbooks. But, boy, what a great way to see if there's some legwork on a book, because, number one, you can get reviews. Number two, you can get a sales rank. Number three, you can market and promote it to see if it can be marketable and promoted. And if it can't, then obviously that may not be a book you want to invest a lot of money in to print. And you may only want to print maybe a few hundred copies versus several thousand. Because let's face it, if it's got really bad reviews and it's got 1- and 2-star reviews instead of 4- and 5-star reviews, that may tell you something about your book. It either needs editing or it simply just doesn't have the – and it may just be a great book that hasn't met its time yet. And,
I would say there's a lot of books –
Well, the vampire books – go ahead.
I was going to say, well, there's a lot of books. It's funny because, like the classics, where I've gone back and I've read classics. I don't know, you're saying, you know, vampire books. We'll actually use this as an example. Okay, so here's an example. I absolutely hate the Twilight series. Everybody knows that. Everybody who listens to me on Blog Talk Radio knows. I'm always bad. I'm really waiting for Stephanie Meyer to drive from up north and, like, show up down here in southern Utah and, like, at my door knocking one day, because I'm always using her books as example. I love the movies. I think the premise of her storyline is amazing, but the actual writing drives me insane because it's that very lyrical writing, and for me it doesn't work. It just for right now, the way life is now, that kind of writing drives me nuts. When I see, you know, contemporary, and when I mean contemporary, I mean modern day society written in that lyrical writing. It drives me nuts. However, I can read Lord of the Rings or the Sherlock Holmes series, or even, you know, read the Arabian Nights, which is even more crazy and lyrical, or William Shakespeare, who I absolutely love, or Dickens, and it doesn't drive me crazy because it fits that time era that those were written in. Where that kind of writing style, to me, doesn't fit this era. And so that's why I think you're talking about when you talk about it may not have met its time. It could just be the writing style is just not enough people are into that style of writing yet.
Right. I've got to run.
Yeah, I know. We've maxed out our time, but I'm glad you came on the show, Dave. It's been great having you. I think we've shared a lot of information for everybody. Is there definitely share your links really quick and any last words you'd like for our listeners?
Well, synergybooks.com, and that's synergy with a hyphen books.com. And that's where people can learn about all the books we've published, as well as the books I've written. And I've got a really neat thing for new authors there, which gives you a lot more information. So that would probably be the best place to go.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dave, for being on the show again. And we'll be getting together because I know we have that October Book Festival coming up that we've got to start planning for.
Looking forward to that. And I hope all of our listeners out there will enjoy the information we've given them, and look forward to our time that we get to spend together on the book festival coming up in October.
All right. Well, you take care and tell your family hi, and I'll chat with you later. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Virginia. And talk to you soon.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
And I just want to let our listeners know again really quickly about the upcoming shows here on the World of Ink Network. We have Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, book discussion with Fran Lewis. Her guests are still to be announced, so I cannot tell you who will be on that show. Then we have our new show, Anything Goes, with our new host, Bennett Pomerantz, and that's on Saturday at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And that's always a fun show with Bennett Pomerantz. He is here with his original show, Anything Goes, at Blog Talk Radio. That's a 30-minute show, so this will be an hour-long show, which is why it's called Another Anything Goes, here on the Featured World of Ink Network. And then The Edge with Cassandra Dane, you can catch that show Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, here at the World of Ink Network. And those are the shows we currently have going on here at Blog Talk Radio, Featured World of Ink Network. This is your host, Virginia Escrenier of The Writing Mama Show. And you can always find out more about us, our guests, the different services, or just send us a question if you have one as an author or a reviewer or reader at theworldofinknetwork.com. We're always grateful for our listeners and Blog Talk Radio for their time that they give us. And we thank you for listening, and have a good night. Bye-bye.
Follow me to the World of Ink.